You are now listening to the Black Girl Nerds Podcast.
Five, six, seven, eight. Holla, boys and girls, it's the BGN. Coming from the Marvel world to the DC friends. All the way from Hollywood to the PCN. She defends everyone from sleazy men. Won't apologize for spitting Shonda Rhimes. The space that we make is never colonized. Talking games and movies and actors.
Words? Better shake your booties for Black Girl Nerds.
Better shake your booties for Black Girl Nerds.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Black Girl Nerds Podcast. My name is Jamie and I am your host along with Ryan this week. We are breaking down yet another recap of episode 4 of X-Men 97. This show is hot, it's on fire, and we're talking about it. We are trying to be consistent with these recaps every week, and we have a special guest, Travis Hobson of Punch Drunk Critics, to join us to talk about all things X-Men 97 with us. So, if you're an X-Men fan, if you've been watching this show, if you've been listening to our recaps, sit back, relax, and enjoy this episode of the Black Girl Nerds Podcast, our episode 4 recap of X-Men 97. Thanks for tuning into this episode of the Black Girl Nerds Podcast. My name is Jamie and I am your host. We are back for yet another recap of X-Men 97. As you can tell, we are being consistent so far with these recaps. We're going to try to do these every week for you. And, you know, we're just so geeked out and we're so excited for X-Men 97. And I'm back with Ryan that's co-hosting with me this week. But we've got a special guest. You know, yeah. I'm really, really excited to have Mr. Travis Hobson of Punch Drunk Critics to talk with us. Travis, thank you so much for coming on the Black Girl Nerds Podcast to chat with
us. Absolutely. I'm happy to finally be here. It's very nice to be asked.
Indeed. To be asked. Oh wow, the shade.
I'm messing with you. It's true. You and I have been friends for only a little while. So you don't know my X-Men, you know, my fascination with the X-Men, my long association, my long love of the X-Men. So you didn't know that. So I don't blame you. I'm just joking with you. So
please, by all means, share your background and your expertise, because that was one of the things that we talked about in our first episode is how we came to know the X-Men. So how did you come to know the X-Men?
My first issue of the X-Men, I was drawn to it. I believe it was Uncanny X-Men 195 or so, maybe. I don't know. Somewhere around there. It was Wolverine holding up a member of Power Pack and he's about to claw her. Or at least it looks like he is. And I believe it wasn't Katie Power. She's the older one. Those are the youngest Power Kid. And I love Power Pack, the little bit I had seen of them. And so I saw them on the cover of an X-Men comic. I bought the X-Men comic. Which is one of the great things that Marvel used to do back in the day was how they would cross over their characters all the time, because the characters would cross-pollinate and it would draw people like me into buying their comics. And from that point on, I was hooked. I was buying every single X-Men thing you could find. And I always have. Not always. I've gone through some spells where I've stopped buying it for a while when it's gotten particularly bad. And like every comic, that's a serialized comic, they go through ups and downs. When the X-Men go down, they really go down. No, that's the thing that sucks. But when they're good, they're great. So I've been a longtime fan. I long ago got rid of the vast majority of my collection, but I've kept all my favorites and I buy comics digitally now like a rational person. I love the X-Men. I always have.
Did you start reading the comics before the animated series, or did the animated series get you into the comics?
No, I started reading them before the animated series. But the animated series coincides with probably my favorite time as an X-Men fan. Yeah. The 90s were a particularly creative period for Marvel and the X-Men. My favorite storylines took place all around that time. And it's funny because they're touching on a few of them this season.
Oh, yeah.
So it's kind of nice. You got one of my favorite, kind of a one-shot character, the Executioner, who showed up in the episode before this one. And he leads he actually follows a crossover that has nothing to do with him, but has his name in it, the Executioner song, which is my favorite X-Men crossover of all time. I love it to death. There are elements of that sprinkled in here, and there's elements of the Goblin Queen saga, all sorts of stuff. It's actually kind of insane how much they've thrown into these first four episodes. I can't
It's
quite
years of history into just like the first four episodes of
wrap
this
my
season.
brain around the fact that we've already seen the introduction of Madeline Pryor and basically and Cable sent into the future
Yes.
and all this
Days
stuff
of Future Past.
all this stuff yeah all this stuff and all the stuff that should take an entire season to tell, they've told in like they've started and moved along in like 20-minute increments. And I'm like, how's this happening right
How is
now?
this happening? And the storytelling, even though it's jam-packed, it still doesn't feel like it doesn't feel rushed to me. It feels like the momentum, is a nice build as we get to one episode to the next, at least for me.
I think.
I haven't read every run of the comics during the 90s, but as a viewer that's just casually watching this and, watched all of the animated series back in the 90s, the pacing feels very tonally similar to what it was back in the 90s.
I never got the feeling back in the 90s that they were throwing so much in there. Like, I know they would like you sprinkle elements from different storylines, and they're doing that here too. There are stories that they're blending together to have nothing to do with one another, and I kind of like that actually in a way. But if I'm honest, I do feel like the creators on this season, I think they realized that they were throwing too much in there in those first three episodes, because this episode feels like what they used to have back in the day, where these fill-in issues, like that would like be like a literal break in between a storyline, because this one has virtually no connection to a lot of the stuff that was going on in the previous three episodes, except until the end. And it feels like in the they would do a fill-in issue, which is like the artist was too tired, he couldn't finish the issue, so they would bring in some other artists to come in, and they would literally break the storyline right in middle and tell this totally separate story, usually a character's having like a dream of some kind. And it'll always be against like a villain that's really easy to write, like Arcade or Mojo.
Oh man, I loved Arcade.
Right. But
I'm sorry, I just geeked out that
you or I
moment.
could write an episode with Arcade in an hour. I mean,
Yeah.
like it's the X-Men get captured, they get put through a maze of stupid traps and games, and they survive, Arcade gets away. That's like the entire episode. But that would be like your classic X-Men fill-in issue. This kind of felt like that. It's like they said, okay, we need to take a bit of a breather. We put a lot out there in those first three episodes.
Let's get
Take a bit of a
Mojo
step
and
back
do that.
and let's have some fun, and then we'll move forward from here.
I also feel like they gave a lot of love to the fans where they know like people are hardcore, they go hardcore for the X-Men. So I kind of felt like they knew they had that freedom to kind of like, hey, we're gonna jump here, with Storm and Forge, because you already know this a little bit, we're gonna take this plot, we're gonna move it forward a little bit, even if it feels like it's packing a lot, they trust the fans to know the Easter eggs and know where they're gonna go with it. So they're
Right.
like, well, let's have fun. Let's dive into this.
Yeah. I think the
I
best part for me is I don't know what they're going to do. Like, I don't know what
Yeah.
they're I
And
don't know what they're
that's the beauty of it,
I don't
right?
know what they're
We
going to
should
stick
know.
with, what's going to be prominent, how these things are going to fit together. Like, I don't know. I have no idea, and
Yeah.
that's kind of cool.
I mean, I think that there are fans that think they know what's going to happen because they've listed the titles of the episodes for folks. You can go on Wikipedia, you can go on the X-Men or the Disney Plus website, and you can see the titles and you can kind of speculate, but at the end of the day, we really don't know what path they're going to take with where they're going to go with the story. So yeah, by the way, yeah, I love the fact that you bring up Arcade. I actually found out about Arcade through the Excalibur comics, not
Oh
through X-Men,
yeah.
but yeah, he was one of the most, he's actually one of my favorite villains in
He's a full
comics.
villain.
So
He's a fun villain. Back in the
He's a
day,
fun villain. Yeah, he's
he's a
like the
fun villain.
Joker
Yeah,
for
he's one of
people
those
who don't
villains. I would say
know.
he gives me Joker vibes.
Yeah, he's like the Joker. He
Absolutely.
just puts fun traps and yeah, anyway.
Yeah.
So yeah, let's get to this episode. It's called Motendo slash Life Death. It's a two-parter, right? So let's start with the opening, because this is something that someone on Threads, by the way, is like the best community to go to for X-Men 97 fans.
Oh.
They are geeks for X-Men 97. So if you're not on Threads, get on there. But someone had pointed out that the opening sequence for Jean Grey is different. If you notice, her hair is pulled back in a ponytail and she is wearing her Jean Grey costume, as opposed to episodes 1 through 3, where her hair is fully out and she has a different costume, which implies that 1 through 3, she was Madeline Pryor, and now we see her donning her costume as Jean Grey. I just thought that was really cool, the way they are showing these little details in the opening sequence that we didn't see before. And also, there's a notable missing mutant in the opening sequence, which is Storm. She's not there,
Yeah.
which is, I guess, telling with what is happening with her story and life death. Bishop is also not there because right now he's in the future. So yeah, I think it's very interesting that the opening sequence changes every episode. So
Like
what
when
did
they
you
put that
guys think about
needle
that? Did you guys notice that change with Jean Grey in the opening titles?
in. I
Oh,
noticed it,
great.
but I
Yeah.
didn't really think that much of it, honestly. I noticed it, but I just thought because they have changed it, like when Magneto was added to the opening credits, like
Yes.
they had been making little changes. I'd be like, oh, that's kind of cool. They're kind of changing this up. I didn't really never really thought about it too much until you just brought it up. So yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Very cool. Very cool. I love the detail. So Motendo Life Death, two-parter. Life Death is actually issue 186 of the comic book of the same name. We'll get into that part of the episode later. So Jubilee, she's celebrating her 18th birthday, and we see all of the mutants there at the table. And I think it's kind of really cool that we see Gambit. I'm gonna bring up Gambit because he's my guy. He's wearing his shirt again. Like, I don't know. There must be something where well, obviously they wrote these episodes and did this way before us fans got all, we were all in a thirst trap over it. But I think maybe it's a thirst trap
Not
for
again,
Gambit
the
towards Rogue, because
Yeah.
he's still in his feelings for Rogue, so maybe he's kind of wearing that shirt to get her
Yeah.
attention. But she wants to celebrate, Jubilee wants to celebrate her 18th birthday by going to a video arcade, and Magneto's like, I ain't having that. I am too sophisticated to be going in some kind of arcade
Grumpy
place.
old Magneto.
Yeah, this grumpy old man ain't having that. So yeah, what were you guys' thoughts about just this first scene with all of the mutants? And then Morph is trying to have a very comical moment. And then Magneto, he's just such a party pooper. Like, why does he gotta be so negative? He's like, my parents died. How dare you? So yeah, what did you guys think about this first scene?
Listen, Magneto, nobody wants to go to the danger room on the 18th birthday, okay? Just get over it. I'm sorry about your past, but we're not trying to party in the danger room. But yeah, I love that you brought up Gambit and the whole like Magneto Rogue thing. It was definitely some tension at the table. The creamer was, I was like, somebody about to throw some
She
creamer or
knows
something. We
exactly
gotta
how
get
many sugars she wants in her
exactly
coffee.
like
I'm like, okay.
I was like, all right, the tension here. I see you flirting. I was like, okay. But yeah, they was messing up the little thruple here a little bit, but I love that. I love how it opened that, gave us that fun moment to kind of see them, relax a little bit because we know it's some drama in the X-Men family, but they can at least, sit down for a kind of drama-free coffee and have some laughs, So yeah, it was a good time.
I mean, I don't know about you, but I'd love to have a danger room for my 18th birthday. I can make anything happen that I could possibly dream of. I love it. I love it.
But you could
Anything
accidentally
happen
die in the
for
danger room. That's what's scary.
my
Yeah.
Now, this was a fun opening sequence. I'm a big fan of Jubilee. She's one of my favorite characters. She has been ever since she first appeared. And I've loved her relationship with Wolverine and everybody. She always has some sort of, well, Wolverine always has some sort of little girl sidekick friend of his, which is kind of a trope for him. But she's always been a great character. I think she's been in the comics. She's sort of been mishandled off and on again because it's hard to write a character that starts off young, and to age them up, it's tough. Kitty Pryde went through that too. It happens all the time. But in this series, in the X-Men animated series, Jubilee is one of the best characters that they have, and she's a lot of fun in this episode too.
She certainly is. And we also see that, you know, throughout this episode, she is getting a little closer with Roberto.
I don't like that though. I don't like that though.
You don't like that?
No, no.
You're a little jealous of Roberto?
First of all, Roberto shouldn't even be there. Get him out of there. And
Oh, no.
we don't need Sunspot there. Get him out. And nobody should be dating Jubilee. Jubilee's off limits.
That
Jubilee's
is, oh, I like
Jubilee.
him. I, you
Oh,
know what's
I like how Travis did the protective dad thing. He's like, stay away from Jubilee.
what's really cool is in Jubilee's room, I love her bedroom, by the way. It's just, you know, very, very juvenile, very cute. But also Roberto, the music that was playing, did you notice the music that was playing in the background? It was like this like salsa music, which I mean, I guess Roberto was playing it. I don't know, but
It must have been
this was,
his Brazilian, something from his home country, Brazil.
yeah, from his home country. But it was putting me in a mood. I was
Was a
like,
little
okay.
swag? Was it a little game going on in this? Okay.
Or maybe Roberto was trying to put, you know, himself in a mood with Jubilee. I don't know, but Jubilee wasn't getting the messaging because she was busy like talking about video games and stuff. She was on that arcade tip. And but she noticed there was like a game console in her room, and she's like, okay, Motendo, what is this? Which is funny because, you know, obviously Motendo is a Nintendo, but for legal issues they can't use that term. But the Motendo game console looked very similar to Sega Genesis system, and it is very interesting that it looks like a Sega Genesis because there is an actual video game called X-Men Mojo World, which we're going to get into a little bit more because they get transported into this video game world that Mojo is a part of. And I don't know, Travis, Ryan, if you guys ever played that game. I'm curious to know your thoughts. I personally have never played X-Men Mojo World, but I did back in the day play the X-Men arcade game, which that game was terrible.
Well, I mean,
It
which
was.
one? You mean the one where there was like six of you and you were a side scroller?
No, the actual arcade game where you were one of the X-Men characters. Yeah.
Where you could be like Dazzler and all that kind of stuff?
I don't remember Dazzler being in the game. It was
The one that was
Wolverine,
in art.
Cyclops, Storm. I don't remember Dazzler being
The one that was in arcades, was why I was thinking when they were doing this episode. How much it hurt me to listen to her talk, to listen to Jubilee talk about going to the arcade, because I used to live at the arcade, and
there. Same.
you can't say that now. There's like no weekend where you can be like, hey, let's just go to
I
the arcade.
know.
And at least here in Virginia, there's like no arcades to go to. You gotta like go to Maryland to go to an arcade, but they're just all gone now. So it gave me a little pang of hurt listening to her talk about with so much love of going to the arcade. I was like, man, but the one that was in the arcades, that was in the actual arcades, was the X-Men. It was a side score, like the Ninja Turtles game that was in arcades. It was
It was like the Ninja
similar
Turtles
as that,
game.
and it was Cyclops and Storm and Dazzler and Wolverine and Colossus and Nightcrawler, I think, were the X-Men you could choose from. That was a
Yes.
game. I love that game to death,
You're
man.
right. Dazzler was in the game. Now that I'm thinking about, I mean, gosh, I was like literally a
It didn't have
kid
my favorite
when it came
X-Men though.
out.
It didn't have Longshot, which made me upset, but that's okay.
Storm
Man, I
was in
didn't get
it,
into
so
this
that's all that
arcade. They need to
mattered to
bring it
me.
back. They need to bring it
You
back
were
for
too
me.
young, Ryan. So
I
Ryan's
know.
very
That's why I say I wanted to play this. My first game was like a Nintendo DS. So I needed to get back in. I need to get back into
See, she's
arcade.
young. But yeah, so none of you guys played X-Men Mojo World then on
I think I
Mm-mm.
played it. If it was on the Sega Genesis back then I would have played it. But
Yeah, I
I
never
cannot
did.
tell you anything about it. What I do remember though
Yeah.
is that the old early X-Men console games were not great.
Yeah.
Almost none of them are great, but then again, a lot of the Marvel games that were on console early were never very good. It took
Yeah.
a long time where they got a handle on those. So
I can't remember if I ever played any of the console games. I just remember the arcade one. But yeah. So yeah, these two characters, Jubilee and Roberto, they are transported into this game console world, and they are like these 16-bit characters. They actually look a little bit better graphics-wise than 16-bit, but
yeah, if you were to replicate what 16-bit really looks like, it would look really crap on your TV. And blended into the background
yeah.
of like current animation, it would look
Yeah, that is very true. Very, very
terrible.
true. So yeah, what did you guys think about, them being transported into this world and then meeting Mojo, which, one of the things that I love about X-Men 97, I feel like we meet a new villain every episode.
Yep.
And Mojo has been one of the most interesting villains I remember from reading the comics. By the way, is he on Ozempic?
Yeah.
What's
Yeah.
going on with his weight
Skinny
loss?
Mojo.
Because if you see Mojo, like comic book Mojo versus this Mojo, or even not even comic book Mojo, the animated series Mojo versus X-Men 97, he's lost a little bit of weight.
Yeah, this seems like a conscious effort to not have an overweight character who is often mocked for his being hit for the way he looked. I think that was a conscious effort to make him look different in this. But then again, there are many different Mojos, and some of them are skinny. So, I mean, but this one seemed like the traditional Mojo who had just, went on a workout plan. So.
Yeah, like he had nice abs. I was like, dang. He's known for having this huge, big, like Jabba the Hutt,
Yeah.
stomach. So I was like, okay, you actually got like washboard abs, dude. All right. But yeah, Ryan, what were your thoughts of your first impressions of Mojo?
I really like this idea of because I hadn't read anything about Mojo, so I was coming in this fresh as just an X-Men fan trying to figure out what they're gonna throw at me next. And I thought it was so cool for them to take the whole video game level to a whole whole nother level, because you have the ending of the scenes and the credits where it looks like you're picking your character in a video game. I guess that might be a call back to like the arcade world or the 90s show. So it was cool to kind of get to see them dive into that. And then also like Jubilee just wanting to go to the arcade to relax. And now she's fighting for her life in a video game, which I thought was all a cool tie-in to that. But yeah, Mojo, he was talking some smack. I was like, man, I was like, they just got to win this game just to shut him up. So he was definitely an interesting villain. It kind of brought back from like the, I feel like last episode we got kind of dark a little bit with the villain, like, as it goes with Sinister. So I liked how they
Oh,
brought it
yeah.
back a little bit, where it was like we could laugh a little bit, like you talk about the washboard abs, so he can jump through the screen and get to him at certain points. He's a little bit more, I guess, fit, you could say, so he could chase him down. So I thought it was a good time.
Yeah,
Yeah, Mr. Sinister. Oh, go ahead.
I enjoyed the fact that we're getting to see Mojo, who's a character that I like back when he's depicted as being kind of a, in a similar sense to Arcade, kind of a fun character that you could, fun villain that you could fight against. In the comics, he's got the entire planet, all his people addicted to television, Earth television. So it's not video games. So it's interesting to see them do this in a kind of different way. And have them be in a video game rather than reenacting television shows, which is what they often did in the comics. So I thought this was a nice twist on that.
So then we meet a older version of Jubilee, and she's kind of like a cyberpunk version of Jubilee. And I found out that she apparently the voice of this character is the original Jubilee in
Oh,
X-Men,
nice.
the animated series. So that was really cool.
I love this Jubilee.
Yeah, so I didn't know that because I thought Jubilee was always the original voice, but that was cool to know that information. But so yeah, so she's there and she helps fight Mojo along with Jubilee and Roberto, and Mojo is the final boss in this video game, which I love that because it's an homage to like when you did all of these, fighting games as a kid. And there's still games like this now, but a lot of these games from of that era had mini bosses, and Mojo is the final boss. So she helps Jubilee and Roberto and aid them in fighting Mojo. So what did you think of I'm trying to see what her character name was. I think it was Abyssa. It's hard to say her name. What did you guys think of that character and her coming into the scene? Because I'm not familiar with her at all. I don't think she was in the animated series, and I don't know her from the
Older
comics.
Jubilee? The older
The
Jubilee?
older Jubilee, yeah.
No, I don't think so either. I think this is the first time we've seen her, and I don't know if we'll get more of that. But personally, I would love to see like an episode of just Jubilee talking to her older self. That sounds amazing, and not unlike that movie we saw at Sundance, My Old Ass, where Aubrey Plaza is talking to like her older self, like her younger self.
Oh, I didn't see that one.
Yeah,
Okay.
that's the entire premise of the movie. It's like your younger version of yourself talking to your older self, older version of yourself. And I would love to see this because Jubilee is such a specific kind of teen back in the 90s. And so she sees her, she's kind of like, I need to know what's going on with all this right here. Because she's like, she doesn't understand what this version of herself is that she's looking at. I totally dug it. I would, like I said, I would love to see those two interact. In later versions of the comics, she's even with all the stuff she goes through, she's still kind of the same lighthearted, spirited, rebellious character that she is as a kid. So, and you still see elements of that in her older self too. All this stuff kind of reminded me of Tron also, which I thought was funny. So, but yeah, I liked seeing her. I hope we see more of her, but I'm not really expecting to.
Yeah, I like how she was her own like cheat code. I was like, only Jubilee could be like to help her own self out of the game, have that flash forward. And also to bounce off a little bit what Travis is saying about going back a little bit to Mojo and talking about how he used to be like this evil kind of TV producer and how he's kind of changed that up a little bit. If you think about like the old and the new school, I thought it was interesting how they did like Who's the Boss. They had Storm in a different world because he was trying to show like how the X-Men now, like I thought that was so cool. Like even though we're old school, we're throwing it back to the 90s. I thought it was so cool for
Was
him to
cool,
say
yeah.
like these X-Men are kind of like dated in a sense, so I need you guys to take over now and bring these young minds in so I can drain their power. I just thought that was such an interesting concept to kind of throw in.
That is a cool
And
idea.
keeping it 90s, keeping it,
Yeah.
in that time capsule of 90, 97, I guess, keeping it from that timeline.
At
So I
this
love
time
that.
period, Jubilee is still a pretty young character in terms of Marvel
Yeah. Oh,
comics.
yeah.
She hasn't been around a whole heck of a long time. The X-Men at this point have been around, or other ones have been around there for like 30 years already.
Yep, she's new. She's a new character. Her and Morph,
Course.
and that I would love to get your opinion on this, Travis, because we talked about Ryan and I talked about this in earlier episodes that Morph, a lot of fans, I remember this from when I first watched the animated series, really didn't take to Morph like they did the other characters because Morph didn't have the history that a lot of the other characters did. He didn't have a comic book run and he was developed for the series. So, I mean, what do you think now with X-Men 97? Now he does have a history. He's got the whole animated series as his legacy. But do you think fans now have more of a liking to Morph compared to the other mutants?
I mean, I personally don't really still care about Morpho all that much. I mean, I don't. I mean, it's just, and look, I mean, he's to me, he doesn't feel like a member of the X-Men to me. He feels like somebody who wandered in from something else.
That's co yeah, it
And like
they
he
didn't give him enough of
doesn't
a
quite,
backstory.
he's there to crack jokes, but nothing else. And I'm just kind of like, but I still don't quite understand his character like all that much. Like in the comics, we get a version of Morph, he's in the Exiles, and he's sort of the same, kind of like cracks a lot of jokes, but he evolves over time. And in that comic, I grew to like him quite a bit. But in the series though, in the animated series, Morph still doesn't really do much for me. And I feel like there are other X-Men that you could have put in there who crack a lot of jokes. You could have put Iceman in there to crack jokes. I mean, you could have done a lot of things in there to have characters who are funny and offer comic relief. I don't Morph has not really done much for me. Even still, doesn't really do much for me. Although I do like it when he picks on Cyclops. All the people who are in like troubled relationships, he seems to have fun picking with
Oh
them.
yeah,
I do
the
appreciate
nightclub
that.
scene with with Wolverine and all of that was
I do
hilarious.
appreciate that. That stuff I do like about more.
Indeed. He's great comic relief for this show, which I absolutely love.
I understand the need to create characters like that for audiences who are when he was created all those years ago. He was and the reason and probably part of the reason why they added Jubilee to the cast back then was to bring in younger audiences, and he brings some like Morph to bring in casual viewers who might not know who's this new character. I get it, but even all these years later, I'm still kind of like, all right, yeah, there's Morph. So.
So then we move on to Life Death, which is actually, as I mentioned before, it was a comic book issue in the X-Men series, about the relationship between Storm and Forge. As you remember, in the previous episode, Storm lost her powers, from a, what's the term, like a
It's
electronic blast?
the gun was called the Ultimate Nullifier back in the
Ultimate
day.
Nullifier. Okay.
It would take away all your powers.
So her powers were taken away from this Ultimate Nullifier, and we later on, well, I don't, does it, is it revealed in the episode? All right, I won't go too far with that. But Storm and Forge, they're at Forge's cabin, and they're bonding over their shared pasts and powers, and we find out that Forge's mutant ability is to be able to invent and create anything that he can dream out of. And Storm asks about Forge's prosthetic legs and explains how he lost them in the war. And Storm admits that she's missed her powers, and Forge offers help to be able to get her powers back. So one of the things that I noticed in the episode is what she's wearing. She's wearing these white coveralls. Well, if you go back to the comic book, she's wearing those same white coveralls. So once again, X-Men 97, keeping it very consistent with us, the comic book readers who remember that issue. I really appreciate that. So I want to stop there before I go further and just ask, what did you guys think so far about, just the introduction of what we see so far in Life Death between Storm and Forge, and sort of what is happening with him saying that he can help Storm, and she's still kind of downtrodden about losing her powers, and just this setup that is happening between them.
I'll be
Ryan, I'll
honest.
start with you.
Okay, go ahead, Ryan. Please go ahead.
Oh, yeah, I just I like I said, I haven't seen this. This kind of made me want to go back and look and see what it is in the comics as far as Storm and Forge, because I know a lot of people, I saw so many mixed reactions about, some people was like, oh, they're bringing it from the comic. Other people were like, no, we don't want to see this. We already know where it's, we know what's going to happen. But yeah, I think I was more focused on just Storm, where I just wanted her powers back, because we all know how big of a Storm fan I am. But shout out to Allison getting to be able to dive into this, this kind of mini episode and really get to, use her range on this, where we get to see that emotion of just how connected Storm is to her powers. And why we love that about Storm and just her trying to like fight no matter what. It's a little flirt in there, but we can always tell, she's wanting to get to the ultimate motivation of like, how do I get my powers back? This is part of me that's missing. I need this answer. So I like how that was, how Allison, like I said, got to play with her range of like the emotions and, trying to find that. Even though we have this Forge connection, for me, I connected to the fact of like how much Storm, felt like a part of her was missing. And how do you fight for something like that? Like, do you let it go eventually? Or do you say, okay, I can get this back. I have the power within me to get this back or to figure out how to get this back. And then how far do you go? Like she was questioning like a lot of things about, how much she wanted to be, herself again.
kind of resent this whole storyline a little bit. I'm not gonna lie. The Storm Forge relationship is very polarizing amongst X-Men fans. I love this time period for Storm where she's without her powers. It's one of my favorites for her. She's never been like a favorite character of mine in terms of the X-Men, but I loved this arc for her because almost every X-Man goes through a period of time where they lose their powers, some for longer than others. But Storm's different than the rest of them because unlike the rest of them, like somebody might shoot blasts from their eyes or, you know, throw cards or whatever, or have strength. She is intimately intertwined with her powers like nobody else is. She's not one of those mutants who's ever been like, man, I'd love to just not have my powers and not have to deal with this stuff. No, she wants her powers. Right. She loves her powers. She's connected to the world around her through her powers. And so when she loses it, she is literally losing a part of herself. And so this period of time where she has to go without it, she has to learn who she is without her powers. Now, every X-Man has to go through that, but it's a longer period for her and it means something much deeper for her. This whole thing with Forge, you know, it's powered by his guilt for what he basically knows he's caused in a way, whether he wants to tell her that up front or not. You know, and their relationship to me in this series is moving way too fast. It's just moving way too fast. It's just,
I agree. Yeah.
It already feels like they're together in this episode. And I'm like,
I was like, did he really drop the L word that quickly?
Yeah. It's just going too fast for me for something that I think really needs to resonate more. That's my major gripe with it. I'm hoping that they give it the time that it needs. Cause like I said, this is such a crucial arc for Storm. I don't know how far they're going to go with it. I mean,
when you said I had an issue with this relationship, I thought you meant like the comics. You're talking about from the standpoint of this.
I personally don't have a relationship with it in the comics. I have a relationship with the way it's playing out in the cartoon though.
Yeah, because I was like, in the comics, she loses her powers for like 3 years.
She loses her powers for a long time, but she also has some of her most crucial moments during this period of time.
Right. So
time period where she proves she's superior to Cyclops. She beats him one-on-one in a fight for leadership without her powers. You know, it's a crucial moment for her that it's so crucial to her even now, like 20, 30 years later. I always look at her as the superior X-Men leader to Cyclops. And I love Cyclops, unlike most people who think he's boring. I love Cyclops. But she's the superior X-Men leader to him.
I do think that they will follow that storyline about her fighting Cyclops for leadership. I think it would be absolutely, because that's a huge arc and a huge you know, trajectory in her storyline that, you know, a lot of fans know about Storm's story, that I think if it wasn't addressed, it's like, okay, come on, how are you going to ignore that? And include life death as a part of her arc and ignore that. So I think they'll include that, but I agree with you.
Life death is the most important Storm-focused storyline.
Exactly. But I agree with you. I think
I don't want to see them like speeding through it. Like I really want
I think for them to speed through it and for Forge to say, I love you. Like literally, what was it? It feels like it was like a days after they just met. I'm like, wait, huh? This does seem a little bit fast. So yeah, I do feel like they are rushing this a little bit. There's a little bit of an Easter egg that we see in the scene of the cabin where Forge walks past the wall, and on the background you see him along with the X-Force team. So that was a nice nod to X-Force. And
more mixed up continuity stuff for the cartoon.
More mixed up continuity stuff. And cool. You know, we're gonna see that because we got a little bit of that in previous episodes with our little baby Nathan.
Exactly.
we now
yeah, carried into the future. We know Nathan Summers. You got taken into the future by Bishop, who was like 20 years away from like debuting or something, or years away from even debuting in comics before that happened. So it's like everything's messy. It's just, it's, like I said, I love it when they mix these things around like that. It doesn't really bother me the way it bothers some other people. Purists, I don't care about all that. But
I love the parallel. I love the parallel because what happened to, you know, him taking Nathan to the future, we saw in Days of Future Past where he came from the past to the present to, you know, and we saw Cable getting introduced that way. So it was a beautiful parallel for me. But anyway, so then yes, Storm and Forge, they ride on the horse into the beautiful sunset and they're riding on to the cliffs and oh, Storm goes a little bit too far and she almost falls off a cliff at one point. But she doesn't, thank God. And then, you know, Forge then tries to help her with, you know, getting her powers back. And then unfortunately he's not successful when he takes her back to his lab and tries to experiment on her. And then Storm wonders, you know, why are you so hell-bent on trying to get my powers back? And then he reveals to her that he's a government contractor and he designed the technology that ultimately caused her to lose her powers. And then boom, that is the big reveal. And she's upset about it, obviously. And that's when he tells her, I love you. He drops the L word. So yeah, that's pretty much the closing of that episode. And I'd love to get your thoughts about like how all of that played out, him dropping the L word, Storm finding out about him being ultimately responsible for her losing her powers, and if you guys had read the comic, how that all correlates and all of that stuff.
We also got the introduction of the adversary at
Oh
the
yes, that as well. Thank you.
a demon that that Forge summoned years ago has just kind of been wreaking havoc ever since. He's got a lot of things that he's done that he needs to make up for. that's kind of like Forge's thing. Like this brilliance comes with it's like a double-edged sword. Like he can create anything all the time, but a lot of stuff that he ends up creating ends up being terrible. And so you get like the ultimate nullifier and other stuff he's done. The demon adversary is another thing he conjured up years earlier in order to do something good, but ends up being really awful. So yeah, Forge has a lot of penance to make up for. So you know, a lot of penance to do.
Yeah, I think you get excited. If you don't know any history about Forge, you just see him walking into the bar saying, "Oh, Storm, I can help you." You get excited because you're like, okay, somebody's gonna give Storm like, you know, a little olive branch here. It's gonna be okay. But then you also, on the other hand, you know how the superhero thing works. Every time somebody says that, you're like, okay, well, what's the catch? What are you up to? So you kind of felt like, you know, the other shoe was gonna drop. He was gonna say something. But yeah, he seemed like he's putting his foot in his mouth a lot of times. It's like, I love you, but I created this weapon that took your powers as part of you. You want your powers back. I don't know if this relationship gonna work. Then he's like, you know, like Travis said, he's creating this adversary feeds on misery. On misery. Storm looks pretty miserable right now. I'm like, sir, this it's not adding up for you. So it's gonna be interesting to see, like, you know, going into the next episodes, how it continues to unfold. But yeah, I mean, they love the cliffhangers on this show are just like insane. They keep you on the edge of your seat coming back. Like you never know. Like it's always that tight close up on the 2D animation on somebody's face and it is black. And you're like, well, hopefully we get to see them, you know, at the end of the next episode. So they definitely know how to keep you on the edge of your seat for this one.
So, who do you guys think will be like the next villain that'll pop up? Is I mean, I guess the adversary, or do you see another villain popping up that's gonna be?
I mean, it looks like it's going to be the adversary for now, but I find it possible that they kind of merge the adversary with some of the demon stuff that might be going on back with the other mutants. So you talk about Maddie Pryor, which could have connections to Limbo and all sorts of stuff like that. So you could be dealing, you could this could be a season full of demon stuff, honestly. This could be the demon season. So who knows?
Demon
That's what it's kind
season.
of starting to feel like. So yeah, I think that might be where they're going here.
Yeah, it's gonna get more and more evil. I'm just gonna pay attention to this next title card at the beginning because I'm like, man, these X-Men are coming up missing. I'm about to pay attention next time. I hadn't noticed it before.
I know. I mean, hopefully we see what happens with Storm's storyline too, and seeing how they move with her arc, and I would love for her to come back up into the title card eventually, but maybe because you know, she's without her powers, she'll be missing from the title card until then. I don't know. And how long will that be? Because
whoever's in the X-Men, right? That's who's in the title card, and she's technically.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like you should just be a lifer, though. I feel like you should always be an X-Men. I feel like you need a lifer, a lifetime membership card. Like, you know, if you're an X-Men, you're X-Men.
That's true. You are. But she ain't going out there to fight nobody. So that's why she ain't living under Magneto's roof.
You're right. She ain't in the danger room, so she don't use, you know, it's fine. It's fine. She'll Magneto get back in there eventually.
Magneto might have X'd her out of the title credits himself.
So. Oh, that's true. That is very true.
He be regulating too, man.
Yeah. He don't play them games. Yeah. If you ain't at the table drinking coffee, he don't play them games. Yeah, you're right.
I imagine they'll probably take out Cyclops and Jean from the title credits at some point. They will probably take a break from the team at some point during the season. After we go through whatever we're gonna go through with Maddie Pryor and whatever, I imagine they'll probably take a break. And then we'll see.
We will see.
I always wonder, are we gonna go through like the Australia sequence? Are we gonna, like, when they spent time in the outback, are we gonna see the Siege Perilous, all this kind of stuff that happened in the comics? I always wonder. That's one of the fun things about the show is I never know where they're going to go exactly. So
I just look forward to seeing other X teams make their appearances, which that has been confirmed. So
who's your favorite all-time X team?
Oh, Excalibur.
Okay,
Excalibur. I mean, you know, they're underrated and not a whole big fan base around them. They're in the UK,
which version of Excalibur?
Chris Claremont.
Okay, so you Chris like Claremont, Captain Britain?
Yeah. So Brian Bridget. Braddock, Kurt Wagner, Megan, Kitty Pride, Widget. Yeah, those guys.
Yeah. For me, it's probably a tie between a Peter David X-Factor run with Jamie Madrix, the Multiple Man. I loved him. He's one of my favorite characters. You could have put him on this team rather than Morph, by the way.
Aiden.
Strong guy, Polaris, Havoc. Love that run on the comic. And the Fabian Nicenza run on X-Force, which was the one led by Cable right after New Mutants canceled. New Mutants became X-Force.
And we might see them in X-Men 97.
I think we're going to see them for sure when Cable comes back. You already got Roberto DaCosta, who's on the team, already out there. So I think you're probably going to see X-Force at some point.
We're going to see X-Force. We're going to see probably X-Factor as well. Yeah. I'm excited. I just hope we see Excalibur. That's my team. So I don't know which run, but yeah. That's what I want to see.
Excalibur was the last X-Men book I ever bought. It was the first for me because I saw it in comic stores, but never really quite understood that it was connected to the X-Men, because it doesn't look like it. Like, if you just look at it on the stands, it doesn't look like it's an X-Men comic. Like, it's like, it's not spelled the same. It's like, it's got all these weird characters
who aren't
mutants and aren't familiar mutants at all. You know, and then I was like, but it has Nightcrawler on it, though. And so I bought it, and I was like, oh, it is tied to it. Oh, okay. You know, Chris Claremont, Alan Davis, one of the best creative teams.
Chris Claremont, Alan Davis, yep.
Alan Davis is an amazing artist.
Amazing artist. And I'll tell you this, Ryan. So the reason why I got an Excalibur, true story, is because I saw this comic book with a whole bunch of boobs on it. And I loved seeing, because Excalibur, the team, is predominantly women. You had Rachel Summers, you had Kitty Pryde, you had Megan. So it was mostly women on the team. And I just hadn't really seen that in a lot of comic books.
Yeah.
And a lot of guys, mostly guys were the illustrators back then, drew like really big boobs on women. And, you know, as a little girl, I was like, ooh, what's this comic book with all these girls with big boobs? I want to see this. And I was just intrigued and I bought it and I read it and I just loved it. And then the illustrations were just really great and the characters were just really interesting and dynamic. And then they had these great villains like Arcade and, they had a lot of women villains. Can't
Because they
come to mind
love
right
that.
now.
They had all
Yeah.
Roma and all these things going on and intergalactic. They were doing mostly cosmic alternate dimension type stories.
Mojo was one of the villains,
Oh,
as a matter of
nice.
fact, in
Okay.
there. Yeah.
And they had Betsy Braddock, the original Psylocke, back when she was
Yes,
still a British
she.
telepath. It had not yet become
Betsy and Brian,
a
brother and
psychic
sister. Yes.
ninja. So,
Yes. Yes, indeed.
you can't argue with a psychic ninja. I need to add this to the reading list.
Yeah, start with the Chris Claremont run, because that was a good run of Excalibur. I haven't read anything outside of that, so I can't speak on those books, but
Yeah,
start with that run.
the Warren Ellis run that followed it later was actually pretty good too.
Okay.
That was a good run. Had Ken Lashley art. Ken Lashley's a great artist too.
Yeah.
So a lot of good stuff there as well. But yeah, the Alan Davis, Chris Claremont stuff was classic.
Indeed, it was. Well, cool. Well, before we go, Travis, do you want to plug anything? Is there anything you've got coming up that you want our listeners to know about? Well, tell them, who you are, what you do, what where they can find your work at
I
least.
know. You can find me every day at punchdrunkcritics.com. Site's been around since 2008, been around forever. Just posted my reviews of Monkey Man and the first Omen. If you're in the DC area, you can find me on Channel 7 every Friday, and I'm on WETA around town as well. So yeah, and on JoeBlow.com too, where I voice all their videos. So if you love their videos, you probably love my voice. That's it. I got nothing X-Men related that I need to plug or anything like that. Except that I need to get my Marvel versus Capcom arcade machine up. It's just been sitting there back there for a long time and not set up. But otherwise, that's it.
I really hope they come out with an X-Men 97 video game. Like, they really need to strike while the iron is hot and come out with a video game.
You know what I almost bought the other day? So I have a lot of posters in my room, but I got rid of all my regular posters and replaced them all with metal posters. They look
Oh,
better.
I heard about that. Yeah. Okay.
I got metal posters for everything. I replaced everything with metal posters. You look better and they're easier to hang, and you can just take them down and put them back up wherever. But they released a new one for X-Men 97 that I almost bought.
Oh,
That has
wow.
like it's an image from the show, has all the characters in it. It
Mm-hmm.
looks amazing. I might still get it, but that's available. That's out there. I wouldn't be surprised to do some sort of X-Men 97 game. But then again, Marvel is really picky about their video game stuff right now. So you might not get anything. I mean, it took them forever to re-release Marvel versus Capcom 2, and they only released like 10,000 units of it to sell. So
Really?
they're just not really super into the video game thing right now. They're just really picky about it. But we'll see. I'm hoping we'll get like a creator-owned version that comes out on like Steam or
They
versus.
gotta do something, 'cause like, wasn't this the number one streamed show next to What If or something like that?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah,
Yeah, we're gonna
for
do
Disney
something.
Plus, like, dude, if y'all want these this bag, go ahead and make that game, 'cause y'all make some money for real. Like, anything
They're gonna do
X-Men
something.
97, if you use that hashtag, if you talk about it on social media, like, it gets so much engagement because there's so many people that love talking about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, cool. Well, thank you guys so much for listening. We look forward to chatting with you next time about episode 5 of X-Men 97, and we'll talk to you next time. Bye.
The Black Girl Nerds podcast is produced by Jamie Broadnax. The opening theme song to our show is written and performed by Samus. Various instrumentals are performed by Samus, Sky Blue, and Shubzilla. You can find various episodes of the Black Girl Nerds podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, Audioboom, Google Play Music, and Spotify.